Welcome to New Realities. This is Alan Steinfeld, and tonight I have a very special guest, the channel Michael, who is talking for 1,050 souls and bringing the message of happiness and peace. And really executing most of this interview tonight is Zachary Feder, and he's been researching this. So we're going to be talking right to Michael right away. And Michael, welcome.
Thank Michael. You. We're delighted for this conscious connection.
Okay, I'm just going to turn it over to Zachary. We're going to try to, like, tune into some of the cosmic questions. Okay, Zachary, please.
Hi. Thank you for joining us this evening, Michael. Well, I'll just straight in. My first question is that many people do spiritual work all their lives and never really change. They have a few mystical experiences, but are never truly able to shift their paradigm. Why do you think this is?
Because a spiritual path does not necessarily mean a divine one. In other words, you are here to be more of who you are. Spirituality can help you get there, but if it is strictly at the conceptual level without application, then it never reaches the profound level of integration that allows you to create the shift. So, indeed, a spiritual path does not necessarily mean a divine one. You are here to reveal more of who you are, to make more of your divinity accessible to both yourself and the universe. Does that make sense?
It does make sense. Well, let me ask, comparatively to the entire world, so few people are making any sort of change in their life. What do you think are the greatest catalysts that make someone change their life from one that is disturbing to themselves and to others to one that is not, to one that is harmonious?
The greatest catalyst for change is discomfort. It could be potentially the carrot, but at this point in humankind's evolution, it is the stick. It is the discomfort, the invitation to evolve. And if you will notice in your lives, all human beings are presented with invitations. Invitations in the form of recurring discomfort. And in that discomfort, you will find personally held beliefs and accompanying behaviors that beg for releasing. This is your soul's request. It is not the dictate of a cruel universe. It is your soul's request that you evolve. Thus, the universe presents the invitations. Unfortunately, for many, the invitations must move beyond simple discomfort and go further into acute pain before they are realized, before they are awakened to. So part of our message to you is to bring your consciousness to your life, to pay attention to your discomfort, to not reject it, but rather look at the discomfort, look at the darkness in your life as a light bringer. Attention to it and embrace it. Give it enough gravity such that you may authentically release it and move on to comfort.
Yeah, I understand exactly what you're saying. I have a question that precisely actually about discomfort. And it's that, as you said, in order to grow, we must often enter into this discomfort. But sometimes we are given indications from our body to avoid certain areas. It's the idea that to push against resistance is to grow, but sometimes the resistances do not go in that direction. How do you think we can tell the difference between something that is a challenge to make us grow and simply a direction that is wrong for us?
You know, we invite you to go beyond the intellectual observation, the perception of what is going on. In other words, what reality you are creating in that moment. And to, in that time and space in which you stand, to locate your heart and to open it. And once you've located your heart and you've opened it, to actually listen to it. Because your heart, it's the channel for your soul's wisdom. And the language, the primary language for the soul, is feelings. It's essential that you locate how you really are feeling versus what you think you should be feeling. And when you locate consciously with an open heart how you really are feeling, you give yourself access to the ultimate guidance system. It cannot fail you. In that moment, you become like a jet airplane. You are then loaded with the ultimate instrumentation panel that allows you to sense and to respond. We have found in our collective experience that if one can locate the heart, open the heart, and listen to its wisdom, that the truth will always be clear, and the direction that serves you makes itself known.
Thank you. If we've all come from the same place and are all fragments of the same original consciousness, why is it that some of us mature quicker than others?
It's the degree of consciousness that you, the fractile, are experiencing. You see, the more conscious you are, the more you are connected to your own divinity, but also the sense that you are everything and everything is you. The more consciousness you bring to your life experience, the greater the sense of oneness. So why do some experience a greater sense of consciousness and others remain more or less asleep? This is a brilliant question, and we thank you for the light you are bringing to the path. You see, life is an experiment. Life is based on a platform of freedom. So it's clear, then, that the extent to which a being would choose to step into consciousness and thus evolve their own soul, it is up to you, isn't it? It's the choice of the individual. So some may choose to remain more or less in the waking sleep, and others may choose to very rapidly evolve. You see, you may come in as a warrior and leave a sage. It's up to you. Your imprint, your soul's imprint, the design of your soul that you brought to this experience called life, it doesn't determine your future. We've used this metaphor recently. Your life is not unlike a giant jawbreaker. You continue to taste the layers and to release them one after another until you get to the golden center, your divinity, where there is only love, there is only light, there is no separation. You are one. Does that answer completely baffle you or scintillate you? We're not certain of your response.
I think it does a bit of both. I wanted to ask you a few questions about the Akashic field.
Yes.
I wanted to know if you think it's available to us here in the third density, and what precisely would be the purpose of exploring it.
The Akashic field is available to everyone. It holds in it all of the information that the universe has created, is creating, and is going to create in the future. Perhaps most importantly for you in the third density, it holds the information, the soul imprints of loved ones who have passed on, as you would say. Thus, you may find it comforting to know that if you choose to, with some practice perhaps, you can more or less astral travel into the Akashic records, and you may choose consciously to locate the soul imprint of the ones you love who have chosen to pass on in order to evolve elsewhere. In this way, you see, you can connect with their soul's wisdom. It's always available to you. And there in the Akashic records, you may also gain their larger perspective of all other dimensions that they have seen. You see, they too, like you, experience life in three dimensions. When the soul, the imprint, the energetic imprint of that soul travels to the Akashic layer and its information is stored, the soul at that point has a much broader perspective. This broader perspective, if you can manage to tap into it, which believe us you can, this will easily and very quickly bring you past the limitations of the third density and expand your potential. It will give you much more to create with. And that, we believe, is very exciting. Because if mankind can expand its potential, in essence, it expands the palette with which it can create unprecedented solutions. So your access individually and collectively to the Akashic records is in large part to access the wisdom of those that have passed.
What would you say were some of the best techniques to access the astral field and the Akashic?
What a beautiful question, because in you it shows both your curiosity and, but most importantly, your openness. You see, if one intends with an open heart to access the Akashic field, it is ideally done from a complete state of openness. Our experience as spirits embodied in human form and our observation of humanity at its current state of evolution is that openness is perhaps one of the most challenging states to attain. So let's talk about the state of openness itself. What does openness feel like, and how do we step into it? In our experience, openness is a wonderful combination of utter relaxation and total neutrality, coupled with incredible focus. And when you are able to relax, to trust, and at the same time to focus on your intent to connect, this is what allows you to reach into not only the Akashic layer, but many other layers of energy as well, including the Kalpa realm, the realm in which we continue our evolution. So, on the surface, dear Zachary, we understand that this could be perceived as somewhat esoteric, but one may achieve the feelings of total relaxation coupled with focus if the higher chakras are opened. Specifically, the pineal gland is a powerful tool for opening. The pineal gland, once stimulated, allows not only an energetic vortex that allows other energy to flow in to be established, but the pineal gland, once stimulated, actually allows the neural net, the neurotransmitters of the brain, to be reconfigured. Ones that exist, that are narrow, they will grow wider. Where none exist, there will be new ones that are grown, new ones that are established, that take root. And we find this very exciting because the brain itself is the final frontier. The brain is the final frontier. And we believe it's very exciting and utterly important that you know that the wiring of your own mind can be changed. And it can be changed if you choose it. In other words, you do not have to wait for a Darwinian evolution to change your brain. You have the capacity to do it now. We think that's incredible, because obviously the moment you change what you believe, you change reality itself. How do you feel about that?
It's exciting. I would like to ask you maybe to speak a little bit more in detail about particular ways of changing one's brain.
Yes. Well, of course, there are methodologies that have been around for the ages. Some, of course, sort of on an unprompted way, they can have what is labeled as a spiritual awakening. And what really constitutes a spiritual awakening is an opening to other energetic fields and to the wisdom, the knowledge, the information that it wishes to transmute and transmit. Others, of course, may work at this, and the techniques that we recommend, of course, are meditation. And there are all sorts of different kinds of techniques, different sorts of meditation that you can use. The challenge with most forms of meditation, however, is that they will only bring you to the neutral, rather relaxed state. How you create the focus this is the greater challenge. This is the other half of the equation. Much of this has to do then with intent. Entering into a deeply meditative state with the intention of connecting with higher levels of energy, layers of energy that you are not accustomed to, that are not your own, entering in without fear, making that your intention. And then this changes the meditative experience. Meditation is not simply about reaching neutral mind. It is about intentionally connecting to other energetic layers. And of course, when you get into the techniques and the technical issues, the breath is vital. There are so many breath techniques that can allow you to enter into these heightened states of consciousness and thus reach into other layers. And this is where the techniques from Kundalini are very useful. They are absolutely profound, in our opinion, in terms of accelerating connectivity with energetic layers that were previously perceived as unavailable to you. But if you are not familiar with Kundalini, if it does not interest you, then we suggest deep meditative techniques. But you change them up. You switch them up by coupling them with the intention, the conscious intention, to connect with other energetic levels that serve you. It's very important that you connect with what serves you. It's not about anyone else's experience. It's about yours, dear one. Is that helpful?
Yes, it is. Do you know how many people...
The meditative, if we may add one thing, the meditative experience changes when you couple it with the intention to connect and to remain somewhat conscious. It changes it entirely. You do succeed in reaching the neutral mind, the relaxed mind, but then this focus piece, now you have that engaged. But it does take some practice, so we highly recommend that you go easy on yourself. And, of course, do not judge yourself in the process, because that will only create an energetic barrier, right?
Mm. This intention to connect, is this something that should be intended at the beginning of practice and then not necessarily dropped, just faded into, or is it something that should be held throughout the practice?
Mm.
Lightly,
we recommend
perhaps.
That it be held throughout the practice. And that the request to allow, be honored, opening and allowing, it's such a challenge, you know. But the moment you open and you allow, the energy that's available somewhere out there that wants to reach you, once you open and allow, then you may think of it, dear one, as just pouring in. You know, your job really isn't to reach it. If you want to connect, you may visualize it actually pouring in. Allow the energy to leak into your dimension, right? Just as a gravity leaks into this one. Allow energy to pour into you, energy that you previously not allowed to do so. It's an incredible experience, and one we invite you to experiment with.
Are there any precautions that someone might take before engaging a practice like this for fear of maybe allowing an entity that is not as benevolent as you, perhaps.
Yes.
What precautions might they be?
Yeah, we understand what you're asking, and we wish to underline this point, that there is no such thing as good or bad. There is only that which works. So one should practice this technique if and only if they are really interested in reaching energy that works. In other words, energy that can create a positive effect in their life. Not that it's right or that it's wrong. It works. It creates change that is desirable or imparts knowledge that is applicable. One way to look at it, then, perhaps, is that you go in and you reach what works. Your desire is to reach the energy that serves you most and to pass politely on any energy that you encounter that does not feel like it serves you, that does not feel like it works. You don't judge the energy in that moment as being good or bad. You simply are discerning. And you may choose to move into a different layer that is more appealing to you. With these sorts of techniques, we recommend that you do not try them alone, actually, that you do them with the company of someone that you trust. Perhaps they remain conscious in the process, and you attempt your new meditative technique with them observing you. This can create the feeling of safety and a nurturing environment. You know, there's really nothing to be afraid of if your intention is to reach that which works. We, as beings, can get confused and into a bit of trouble when we are not clear on that before going in. And then we may encounter energy that is really not there to serve us, but rather to scramble the channel, if that makes any sense.
Well, I had an experience last night of encountering something that did not work. I won't use the word bad, but I'll say it did not work, and it took me several hours to remove it. How would you suggest I go about a cleanup like this in the future?
Yes. We ask you a question. What state were you in? What was your intention? Were you consciously aware of it, or were you just leaving yourself energetically open without a clear intention?
My intention was to connect, but it may not have been as clear now in retrospect as it could have been.
Yes. And we see that this energy, on some level, it really frightened you. Is that correct?
Yeah.
So for the energetic cleanup, we recommend now that you allow us to help you. Would you mind?
Not at all.
Okay. Close your eyes, please, and gently allow yourself to center, to engage with you, and breathe very, very deeply. Very, very deeply. Celebrate that you have the curiosity and the openness to experiment with new possibilities. This is very much desired and very much necessary for a sustainable world. So in this way, you may celebrate that you are somewhat of a pioneer. Embrace this aspect of you. Breathe deeply now. Inhale. Suspend the breath. And as you exhale, release the fear you experienced while encountering this energy. Just release it. Take another deep breath. Suspend the breath. And as you exhale, release the fear. Thank this energy for presenting itself to you. But kindly now envision kissing it and sending it on its way. This is not energy that appeals to you. Therefore, you will make the conscious decision to move on to something that does, something that works. As of now, all this energy and the fear it created in your heart and your mind is released. It cannot hurt you, and it will not return. If you clarify your intention and seek to connect with that which works, you are loved.
Well, thank
you. Take another deep breath and return to your body now. And tell us how you feel.
I feel slightly charged.
Slightly charged is a really good thing these days.
I think it's always a good thing. So thank you, yes.
You recharged your own battery, you see. Because when we sense fear, when we feel fear, we drain energy. And when we release fear, we actually recoup it. So you are charged. And you did it yourself. So now you take your newfound energy and you bring it into your next experiment. But we do recommend that you make your intention to connect with what works. Very, very clear indeed. We're grateful for the learning from this experiment.
Well, it's mutual. I have a couple more questions about the Akashic field. Is it possible to access the Akashic records using light and color? And can this access help to remove biological conditioning?
This is a fascinating question, and we will answer it to the best of our ability. Light and color, you may look at them or consider them as channels to infinite wisdom. Do you understand that statement?
As much as I can.
All right. We will try to do our best and explain further. Just as everyone in the physical realm has different ways of picking up and learning information, some are visual, some are more visceral, and so on, light and color, they are two pathways to infinite wisdom. As is sound, for example. Sound is another way to connect. Light is another way to connect. Color particularly of that light, is another way to connect. And when you experiment with sound, with light, with color, and other pathways available to you, the more you experiment with these pathways, the more you can access. And of course, the more you access, the more your energy changes. You see, when you reach into the Akashic layer or allow the Akashic layer to flow into you by experimenting with light or sound or color, that energy of the Akashic field, it actually shifts your energy, doesn't it? It shifts it to a higher vibration. And when you vibrate at a higher level on a sustained basis, the longer you can maintain that vibration, the more likely it is that your physical being, the way you are wired, the way you are constructed in the physical dimension, the more likely that will change. And thus, you can overcome biology, can you? This is why in the healing arts, we very much encourage you to experiment with these pathways to higher energy and sound, light, color are just some of them, aren't they? And we sense that your knowing already shares this with you. We're not sharing with you anything that you do not innately know. We are just shining a light on it and reminding you of this.
Do you know how many people in the third density at the moment are in contact with the Akashic records, consciously, I should say?
Oh, we would say very few consciously, but nearly 100% unconsciously. You see, when you are in your dream state, oftentimes you are connecting into the Akashic field. And, of course, you're not doing it, in a conscious way. You are doing it coming from the dream state. You are allowing your soul to travel and to basically get nourishment, aren't you? The exciting opportunity is for the perhaps 2% of the world's population that are allowing the Akashic field to reach them, that 2% expand. Because the more you can allow energy that serves to flow into your realm, into your sense of being, the greater your own healing at not only a personal level, but a collective level. Does that make sense?
It does.
In the Akashic layer, dear one, there is enormous nurturing that goes on there. There's enormous wisdom, and healing comes about as a result of accessing it. The sense that all exists now, that nothing is lost, that everything makes sense and is coming together, regardless of who you are or what you do, that the universe is perfect. That knowing is articulated so beautifully there. And when one goes there, you really are able to get a glimpse of what it feels like to be that supernova. You get the sense of what it is to be one. But it's not a perception, it's a knowing, it's an experience. And of course, there are no words for that, are there? But when a being will come back from what they might label as an indescribable dream, there's typically two scenarios there. They've either visited the Akashic layer and gotten some sort of profound knowing or nurturing that their soul required, or they've actually experienced a life that the exact same soul is living in another dimension, a life they are living in another dimension. So they may have incredible feelings of deja vu, for example, or incredible feelings of joy. They may be weeping because they cannot describe it. This is very typical of these sorts of experiences. Delightfully, they are all within your reach.
I'd like to ask a question about the densities and about negative and positive polarity.
We will do our best. Continue.
As I understand it, at a certain point in time, there is something that's called a harvest that will take place where if one has achieved 51% positive polarity, as to say service to others, one will move to a fifth density realm.
Yes.
And if one is at 95% negative polarity, one will move to a fifth density negative polarity realm. What is your opinion of this, I guess I should call it cosmology?
Cosmology is a very complicated topic, isn't it? Because the reality is that there is no universal theory, you know? Allow us to explain. You live in your universe, but, of course, there are many, many, many universes. And these universes, they created themselves out of waves touching. A positive wave, what might be a plus sign, and a negative wave, right? They touch, and through the waves touching, particles are then formed, particles of matter. So, dear one, as special as we may all feel, as special as you may feel, or your listeners may feel, there is an infinite number of universes. And available to your scientists at this point, they have perceived mathematically 11 densities, the fifth just being one of them. What you are speaking of is really evolution itself. And we do not see, for example, a great harvest where people are sorted into negative 5 and plus 5 density based on their soul's evolution, where they are at. For in that, there would be judgment. And where there is judgment, there is not love. Rather, the soul, based on its evolution, it enters the astral layer. It assesses for itself where it wishes to evolve, where it wishes to continue to learn and to reveal more of itself. We do see that some may choose to stay in the third dimension, or even fall back into a negative 5 dimension, whereas others may choose to be in the fifth. We wish to underpin here that this really is a matter of choice, the choice of the soul. You see, you are not a participant in a universe where your choices are directed by some great hand. You create your life. You create the evolution that works for you. So this harvest idea, we do feel that it's perhaps more related to this idea of consciousness sweeping your planet, and that at some point, 95% of the beings on your planet will be what you might call in a state of heightened consciousness, whereas the other 5% will be in the walking sleep. Does this make them bad? Does this relegate them to some lesser dimension? This remains to be seen, but our sense is no.
Could you tell me something about Saint Germain?
You know, Saint Germain is an incredible figure, and we see that you are studying this figure intensively, yeah? And you wish to do quite a bit of writing relative to Saint Germain. Saint Germain was a light bringer, an evolved soul of sorts, willing to take risks with being. What does being mean? How does it present itself? What does life look like? Let's experiment on the outer edges and see what happens. Saint Germain is an interesting figure to study because Saint Germain can encourage everyone to be more of who they really are, right? The lesson there is to not live in fear. The lesson is to live in love, to expand one's horizons. You're here to be more. You're here to reveal your divinity to yourself and others, to place limitations on yourself. It's not fair to you, but it's not fair to the universe. The universe demands, requests that you be authentically who you are. So in a way, Saint Germain is a study in authenticity. Does that make sense?
It does.
Good. It's a walk. It's a path of authenticity. Authenticity, whatever it turns up, is beautiful. Somehow, beings do not believe that they can be authentically who they are without it somehow being less than or rejected. But authenticity in its divine shape, its divine form, is always desirable. Authenticity works. The world, it needs quite a bit more authenticity at its stage of evolution. Would you agree?
I do.
I
have a couple of questions from some of our listeners. I think we have time for maybe two. One is, what perceptions do you have, if any, relating to time boundary events and human groupings?
My goodness, what an interesting question. Time boundary events and human groupings. Well, we'll give you our opinion and we'll see if you can make sense of it. It may sound nonsensical to your ears at this point. Time and space and consciousness allow energy to change. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm.
So energy, you, for example, that's placed into the space-time continuum, if you put you, energy, through the pipeline of space plus time plus consciousness, you can spit out something at the other end that is different, fundamentally different. So a veil may be removed, a new layer of authenticity revealed, more of your divinity and the light therein accessible. It would be natural then to assume that there are groupings of souls, thus groupings of people, who choose to come into space and time in a particular way. And they create a group collective consciousness together, a culture, as it were. And based on their experience, their collective experience in the space-time continuum, the group enters one way and they come out differently. Does that make sense?
It does.
So it is natural that there are groups of souls who wish to have a collective experience together. So they come into space and time in a particular way, at a particular point, with an intention, a lesson that they wish to learn, an evolution they wish to complete. So the wonderful thing is that this is not brought upon you, again, by a mandate. This is all getting down to this wonderful choice of the soul. And sometimes in an incarnation, you choose to work in a group dynamic more than other lifetimes. In other lifetimes, perhaps your work is more or less secluded, more independent, more about detachment. We hope that's helpful.
Thank you. My last question is about dreams.
We love dreams.
How would you suggest to the many hundreds of thousands of people working with their dreams? There's such a mass of information, so much to think about, so much to take into account. It almost seems impossible to do it all. Is the very fact of recording and discussing dreams alone a benefit, or does one need to go further?
We find dreams fascinating and very enjoyable, and we highly recommend that they not be taken too literally, because dreams are typically metaphorical, aren't they? They are metaphors, representations of what wishes to reveal itself or be known or perhaps be learned. Therefore, dreams are not to be taken literally. Rather, they really must be viewed from a symbology perspective, but not even on a group level. It really gets down to what does the event, the thing, the place, the person, what does that mean to you? And to go beyond the intellectual examination of dreams, and once again, to locate and open the heart, and to have a discussion with your own heart about what the dream means to you. What wishes to reveal itself? What wishes to be known? What wishes to be learned? Dreams are teachers, aren't they? They teach us what to forgive, what to remember, what to pursue, perhaps. They allow us, perhaps the greatest gift of dreams is that they allow us to connect in to infinite potential. Because when you are in a dream, you are boundaryless, right?
Mm.
So if a dream can present to you what consciousness, what boundarylessness feels like, it gives you a glimpse of what is possible if you yourself, while awake, experiment.
Thank you for that. I think I'll end on one final question about dreams.
Yes.
What do you think of lucid dreaming? Because, at least for me, on the one hand, there's a more conscious exploration that can take place, but on the other, I feel that there's a certain communication with the unconscious that is stopped. And suddenly when you begin to create things yourself, you're cutting off that communication. So there's a pro and a con to the whole affair. What do you think about that?
We would categorize, and forgive us, we do not like labeling things, but our experience with lucid dreaming, as you phrase it, it's really more about accessing one's imagination. And the imagination is rather like an energetic body, right? Just like the ego is an energetic body of fear and the heart is an energetic body of love, the imagination is an energetic body of possibility. When you lucid dream, you give yourself permission to access possibility. So in this way, it's very productive. And you are able to, in that moment, release, to a very large extent, your perception. You're just able to allow the imagination to run wild without judging it. And this can be very beneficial, of course, particularly if you're blocked. If you're energetically blocked, if you feel constrained, then by all means, lucid dream, allow your imagination to run wild. That energetic field of possibility is very valuable. But on the other side of it, if you find yourself lucid dreaming all the time and not dealing with the reality of your space-time continuum and applying your consciousness to that and designing happily your life, one conscious decision after another, well then, you can get into a spot of trouble, can't you? So, like anything, it really is about balance, isn't it?
Well, just to end on, do you think you could give our listeners one final tip on how to enter the lucid dreaming state more easily?
Close your eyes and breathe very deeply and continue to breathe. Release all perceptions of how reality should be or is. And allow whatever wishes to present itself to you, whatever possibilities wish to come in, allow them to come in. And if they please you, engage with them further. If not, move on to the next possibility. Remember that you are divinity itself. Living, breathing, walking, talking divinity, capable of anything. Open yourself to the sea of potential. And enjoy.
Michael, thank you very much for speaking with us this evening.
Yes, Michael. Actually, I just had one quick wrap-up. What's it all for? If we come from divinity and go back to divinity, why? What's the game of it all about, and why are we doing it?
So divinity can experience itself. You may think of it this way, one. Divinity was bored. It did not want to exist in a singularity. It wanted to experience the sensation of duality such that it could enjoy the experience of singularity on a more profound level and love itself more.
Thank you, Michael. I really appreciate this conversation with Zachary Feder, and this has been Michael speaking through Linda Segal, and the website is experiencehappiness.net. I'm Alan Steinfeld for New Realities, and please tune in next week. Check out our website, newrealities.com, and email us at newrealities@earthlink.net. Thank you all for listening, and see you and hear from you next week.